This is Sean Hennan, co-executive producer, and with Lucas Ryder, co-writer of episode 605, Alter Ego. You're listening to The Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
I just want to be clear, the only person that can talk about fate is Charlie. Welcome to the award-winning Blacklist Exposed podcast. I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm inmate Aaron Peterson, still in the clink, and there's still no sign of Michael Schofield. Thanks for joining us once again as we discuss Alter Ego, written by Sean Hennan and Lucas Ryder, and directed by John Turlisky. That's like turkey, but not. It's less than turkey. I don't know where I'm going with that. Show notes and other intel for this episode of the Blacklist Exposed can be found at theblacklistexposed.com. John Turlisky.
There you go.
But the way that Troy wrote it for me, because he knows I'm stupid and I can't read names, he actually does it phonetically. And I'm like, it kind of looks like turkey, but less.
And hopefully I got that right. This week's episode, we'll cover off on our profiling question from last week with thoughts from all of you, dig deep into this week's case profile as usual, and then hear what you thought about Alter Ego in Special Agent Intel. Remember, if you are enjoying the podcast and having a blast, be sure to fill the fedora. That's right. Support the show. Throw a few bucks our way in the hat. Visit Patreon. That's Patreon. Patreon.com/TheBlacklistGSM.
Real quick before we move on, I want to say thank you to Rory for doing an excellent job last week. I almost just didn't come back. I almost took a sabbatical for about 3 months. But Troy said, I'm required by law, so I'm back.
I thought Rory was actually looking for rat poisoning potentially for you, but...
Oh, ouch, dude. All right, well, with that, let's see how you all answered last week's profiling question. What happened between the fire and October 1991?
Wendy says, I think they want us to think along the lines that he was taking steps to become Raymond Reddington. I don't think it is. Something is nigging me about the timeline, and I don't know what it is. I'm judging that by what has been said shown to us. The way that Dom tells it is that our Red more or less swept in and then made a hell of a mess of things. Likewise, with Richard, the former colleague, he too said more or less the same thing. I do think there's a possibility our Red became the real Raymond Reddington even before the night of the fire. But then again, I may be talking through my arse.
Well, props for using the word niggling, because I don't know what that means. And I actually had a trigger to it at first. And then I'm like, oh, wait, no, it's an actual word. Okay.
And right. Arse. Whew. Arse is a good one, too.
I love arse. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be said for that. I'm still of the mindset, it's got to be brother, got to be... another love interest. I mean, maybe he and Katerina were, you know, they were going to run off with kids, and then the real Raymond Reddington got in the way, and then Liz shot dead, and also Kirk was there. I mean, it could have just been a whole conundrum of things that happened that night.
And we should qualify here, too, because the reason why we asked this question is people were confused because they're like, well, wait a minute. If Requiem said the fire was in 89, and then Red says he comes home and finds his family all dead, Christmas of 1990, and then now the surgery is October of 1991, like, there just seems like there's too much time in between, so what the hell's going on?
All right, moving on to Tori. Tori says stuff that we may or may not get answers to, which means the fans may or may not believe it. True.
Very true. Monica said, before the fire, Dom asked our Red to look after Katerina and help her find Masha. Original Raymond Reddington gets burned and loses track of Katerina, but sticks with helping Masha. The only way to do that, for reasons not yet known, he decided to take the identity of the real Red. The Raymond Reddington's body then was moved out of the burned house and later reburied with Mr. Kaplan's help. Therefore, our Red gets extensive plastic surgery done in that time frame while plotting to build his empire in order to help Masha. Confused? Yeah, because I'm like, Raymond, original Red. It's too many Reds.
Yeah, it's too many things that we're trying to keep straight, too. And yeah, that's just too much. Carolyn says, I speculate that the following occurred during that time frame. For whatever reason, Fire Night spelled certain doom for Katerina and everyone she loved. So she searched high
seashells
and low
for the seashore.
I know, say that three times so fast. I'll just do this whole thing in Sean Connery. So she searched high and low for several weeks to find a way to keep her family together, but to no avail. The only way to protect her star of the sea was to look to the sea, to foreign shores, and a whole new identity. The planets lined up and the path was clear. She had already covered up the death of a lover, who had met his violent end at the hands of her innocent daughter, and from the ashes of that terrible night rose a new life, a new identity, one which would allow her to provide for and safeguard her child's future. Extreme measures for a woman who led an extreme lifestyle. Sounds like the back of a novel.
I was going to say, I was like, are we like Daniel Steele or something?
That's how I was reading it.
That's a book jacket I want to read. And then Tatiana put up a great blog post on Tumblr. I'll try to paraphrase this because it's rather lengthy.
Yeah, because what you do great is paraphrasing.
Basically, after Katerina's disappearance post the night of the fire in 1989, based in Requiem, she actually contacts Carla. And now Carla and her basically have this conversation about the affair. And then Katerina basically blackmails Carla, but promises that she can save Carla and her daughter, Jennifer. And then that's when they basically hatched a plan to make it look like Raymond Reddington was still alive on assignment. And then they go ahead and eventually set it up so that they burn the house down and all the other stuff. And the family goes missing to go into WITSEC and all of that stuff. So that's how we get to the 1990 disappearance, because they're actually in cahoots, which I guess is supported by the conversation they have in the front. Back in season two. Then Katerina had been playing Reddington for almost all of a year at this point, but she has to go underground because she's not quite perfect at it. So that leads us to Greta. Remember the lady at the theater that read Mother Courage to her in one complete sitting? Well, Katerina took refuge in the theater, the safest place for one who would need to become the identity of another person. So in the 10 months between 1990 and October of 1991, Katerina lived under the wings of Greta and learned how to become a man. And therefore, that was how she was able to practice deepening her voice, do the hormone replacement, grow the facial hair, et cetera, et cetera, so she could begin her new life.
I can't even take that seriously anymore. Whatever.
But at least, look, but the good thing about it is that it at least uses things from the show to support the theory in order to make the timeline fit. So I give props for using the stuff on the screen and not stuff that you come up with out of your head.
True story. But last week, Red banged that dude's mom. So I'm gonna go with Red the dude. Still on that boat. Still on it. All right. Was there anything else?
Nope. That's it for this week.
That was a nice thesis. Well, next, for our next profiling question, here it is. Ready? Will Red get out of prison legally or illegally? Because this week, all right, he tried the legal means. It didn't work out. Now I want to know, what do you guys think? Is he getting out of the clink legally or illegally? Is he going to have to bust out? Is he going to have to find the Schofield and Lincoln Burrows and figure a way out?
Well, and they've already done the whole get people free from the prison transport thing, because now if he's going back and forth between Gen Pop and the holding and the Gen Pop and the holding for all these different scenarios that he's got to come and meet up with, and there's plenty of times for him to escape.
It's possible. I mean, I'm starting to wonder if that's the only way he gets out of here, because I don't think he can beat all the other charges, except maybe his one out is, I'm not really Raymond Reddington.
That would be a good way to go. That didn't even cross my mind, but that would be... But then is the immunity agreement valid then too? I guess it's confusing.
Well, would it matter? I mean, if he could say, look, I'm not that guy. I mean, the guy you're associating me with, I'm not that guy. I mean, my pseudo whatever she is just proved it to you. So I'm not that guy.
This is true. That would be a good way to wrap up the story.
Mm-hmm. You got me on the gun charge. Okay, I'll take probation. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks all that answered this week. Now, before we get conned into thinking we're watching Blindspot, let's dig into this week's case profile.
Okay, I've never watched Blindspot. Is that a nod to, like, do they do cases like this a lot?
It's an FBI show.
Oh,
they got to follow. They got to follow the tattoos, the clues. I mean, so instead of me giving you a blacklister, I read the blacklister off your body. What's the difference?
Understood. All right. Well, you know what? I'm done monkeying around for this episode. This episode is furtive. How many times do I got to hear that word? And it's like the word of the day. It was like Sesame Street in spots. It was pretty funny. All right. So here's the plot of this episode. Van Ness is killed for dealing with business with Reddington. We think that's what puts him on the case, but it's actually not what happens. He's killed by monkeys or something.
Monkeys. They were back in the shadow, and I'm like, what is that on his face? Is it just distorted? And then they get closer, and it's like, oh, it's monkey masks.
Wasn't it creepy, though?
It was super creepy. The music in the background, the whole people's mouths are gaping open, looking upward. Is this some kind of like, I think it's a ritual cult thing, like a religious concept potentially. And then it's just monkeys with dry ice in a container.
I had a very, very reminiscent reaction to what, like when I watched The Strangers. You ever see the movie The Strangers?
Oh, yeah.
Very similar to that, where you have people that wear these really like childlike, but effectively creepy masks, and they're bouncing around the room, and you're having a debate in your mind, like, is this as creepy as I think it is? And then, yeah, this is really creepy. You got people in your house and they're, you know, wearing child's masks and they're terrifying. And then they kill this guy. They try to make him drink. Was that dry ice? Is that what it was?
Well, it was some kind of poison. They use the dry ice for whatever they can do to make it foam up or smoke up for the effect to make
first
it look
I
like
thought it was coffee, and then it, like, you know, when it starts burning skin, I'm thinking it's probably not coffee. It's probably something else. And he kills Van Ness and does this weird thing when they set him around a table and make sure that their mouths are agape, which I don't quite understand the purpose of that. Did you understand why that was? Was it just for an aesthetic? Was it just because they thought it was funny? What?
My guess is they probably set it up to look like it would be some kind of serial killer thing. So that would keep them off their trail, because who's going to look for a bunch of actors that are murderers? So they probably made it look like it was a deeper conspiracy than it really was in order to keep them off their trail. That would be because it has no point.
Well, they were kind of setting it up to look like the house just caught on fire, right? Like exploded or whatever. It wasn't supposed to look, it's supposed to look like an accident, not so much a murder.
That's the part I wasn't putting together. It's like, if they're going to blow up the house, why spend all that time dressing up the scene to begin with? That's why at first when the cold open happened, I'm like, there's got to be way more to this story than just I blew up the house. Why would you do all of that work and then just torch the dog even?
Well, to make it look like an accident. And by the way, I just want to say props to Blacklist, because nobody ever kills the dog on anything. Their dog always runs out. They even left the door open when they ran out. And I'm like, well, the dog's going to run out. Nope. Fido's dumbass is up there. Boom. I know it's a weird thing to give props for, but I like when they go through with it.
Oh my gosh. PETA was definitely picking up the phone and calling this week though.
Oh man, well, they call about everything else. They might as well. You heard they want Bo Peep's crook kicked off of Toy Story 4. Yes. Like, what? You need more to do. I mean, you're running out of people to complain about. All right, so Alter Ego sounds amazing, by the way. I think this is the greatest idea ever. Essentially, it's an organization that makes sure your dreams come true.
No, hold on. I just want to get this on the record right here. That okay. Aaron thinks that Alter Ego sounds amazing. This whole concept about making your dreams come true. And yet he refuses to watch Dollhouse, which is the same kind of thing.
No, I did watch Dollhouse. I didn't like it.
Oh, I didn't realize you finished it, because I thought you
No, I didn't finish it. Oh, okay. I watched like four episodes and said no.
Oh my gosh.
Because my time is important to me. Your time's not. I understand. I value my free time.
But Harry,
I like Eliza Dushku too, but not enough to watch like two seasons of something I don't enjoy.
But Harry Lennox is in it for two seasons. You should support Harry.
I do support Harry. I watch The Blacklist every single week. So thanks, Harry.
Anyways, right. Continue.
Okay, so it makes all your dreams come true. If you're a gay man wanting to fake a wedding to make your parents happy, done. Do you want to convince your best friends you date supermodels? You got it. All right, that's something I wanted to do. Sorry. If this was a thing, I would probably at least read the pamphlet, is what I'm saying. This is kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, I think it's really great to have a way to do all this stuff, and then you realize that at the end of it, all you go is get drugged in Mexico, and you get a lousy t-shirt.
Been there, too. All right, so Deidre and her friends concoct this plot to date Tim. Hear me out. Don't interrupt. Let me finish all of this. Deidre and her friends concoct a plot to date Tim, a poor trailer park resident, named Peterson, by the way. I feel insulted. I got a Peterson in my name, and I kind of felt like, hey, not all of us are like this, all right? Anyway, and convince him he has a long-lost sister with a husband attached, and then bump off his real father so Tim inherits all that cash. Then, wait, there's more. Then get pregnant and then kill Tim so they get the money. What? Don't get me wrong. I thought this episode was great. I had a fun time with it throughout. But if you stop and actually go, wait, what? This plot is the most, this is a full definition of the long con.
Oh, it absolutely is. Because they were together for almost a year, I believe it was, in order to make this thing all happen. And the only question I have coming out of it was she actually pregnant? or was she going to get pregnant some other way and then claim it was Tim's? That was the part that I was still confused by.
Oh, she was definitely, I mean, I believe 100% she was pregnant, which means she's going to be in jail and poor Tim's going to have his prison baby. It's going to suck. He's still going to have to deal with it for the rest of his life. Oh, I know how that goes. All right, never mind. Sorry, I said that out loud. So, very intricate plan. I liked it. I liked it. It was really creative and clever. I thought this whole episode was clever, but it was a little far-fetched. But I don't really care. It's TV.
Yeah, you know, the far-fetched ones, though, I think are the more fun episodes.
Absolutely. Like, I had a blast this entire episode with the court stuff because I love courtroom stuff. I know a lot of fans aren't loving that he's still in. You could leave him there all season. I'm probably going to love it. I'm probably going to love every second of it.
The big thing about this whole cockamamie thing was in order for him to get this vote, right?
You say cockamamie. I didn't know my grandma was here.
I love Sean Hennan. I mean, Sean Hennan was one of the writers on Redemption 2, and it was just some of the best kind of lines that we had over there with the whole Eddie Gathegi and Ryan Eagle doing their odd couple back and forth. So props to Sean for coming up with this. But oh my gosh, it's just so out there for you to be plausible. And then to think that the sister or the fake sister and the sister's fake husband and then the lady who is pregnant, all three of them are those monkeys at the first part of the thing. I'm like, they don't seem like they could put this together very well.
Well, when you go back, because, you know, I rewatched it. I'm sure you did, too. You can tell it's them when you go. And we knew once I saw Deirdre at the party, at Tim's party, when Wrestler and Liz first get there, I definitely knew that
she was
the
in
same
on
girl.
It from the get-go.
Yeah, because you could tell hair was the same. It was just in a ponytail when she was, you know, doing that. So,
and the other guy was super tall.
Absolutely. So, all right, let's get into the characters and break down the rest of this episode. Let's start with music, which, by the way, wasted opportunity to play Skid Row's Monkey Business, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, instead we get Vera Lynn's We'll Meet Again, which for some reason had this really creepy, eerie feeling when it was paired with the scene. I'm just going like, wow, what a really weird, eclectic choice, but it seemed to work out just fine. Then at the end of the episode, as Samar finally understands the concept as you play Words with Friends, right? Words with Friends. Summer Skeletons plays from a repeat favorite artist of the Blacklist series, Radical Face.
Well, they were playing Word Splurge, right?
I can't remember which exact one it is, but it worked better for my
I think thing. They used a fake game for that one. It was Word Splurge.
But they need to play with each other. See, I was trying to make it fit. Whatever. It doesn't matter because it's all great music nonetheless, and you can hear all the great songs about the Blacklist by visiting the Spotify playlist or the Apple Music playlist curated by us, and those links are available at the website theblacklistexposed.com. Go ahead and check that out. It's a blast.
All right, now the rest of the characters. Now, this is what we've been trying to get to with Dembe. We've wanted to see him kind of working as Red's, I don't know, ambassador in the field, so to speak. And now he is. He's running point outside of the system. While Red's locked up, he's handling a business outside. And he's trying to deal with several issues because some of his clients, customers, partners, whatever they're called or defined as, are getting a little sketchy about dealing with Red when he's locked up. And they think he's going to go away and he's going to turncoat. You know, they don't know he's already turning state's evidence to everything. So it was really cool to see Dembe running that aspect of it, to actually see him be part of the organization as opposed to just quote unquote the muscle. Are you happy we're seeing more? I really want more of that.
Yeah, I thought it was great to have Dembe kind of walk into the room and Liz is like, what are you doing here? And Dembe's like, I just need a minute. And then she actually parts ways for Dembe. So the relationship between Liz and Dembe becomes a very interesting thing if Dembe keeps this up on a regular basis, because now you have to wonder, well, how much does Dembe know? And is Dembe somebody I can lean on? Or is Dembe truly loyal to Red at the end of the day? So if they ever give Liz something more to do going forward, since the reason why she put him in jail was to actually uncover the mythology, I'd love to see how her and Dembe's relationship changes over the course of the next couple episodes, if this is the way it continues.
Well, yeah, I wonder. I firmly believe Red is fine going to court because he really wants that copy of that tape. So, you know, I wonder if Dembe will actually hear it too, and he'll hear of Liz's betrayal. And then see how that plays with him and her, you know?
Yeah, because now that the gun case was thrown, well, not thrown out, the gun was allowed to be admissible as evidence for this trial, and then therefore they're going to go ahead and do the whole jury thing. Does the recording then become admissible evidence when they go to the full trial with a jury?
No, because the possibly because they're going to have to determine if the gun violates his immunity agreement. That's what they have to do before they can go proceed to a full trial. And they think it will, but first they had to make sure that the gun was even a proper search. So now they have to say that the immunity agreement is, you know, violated. They have to go back to court for that. So, you know, court runs for a long time. There's a whole lot of hassles and hoops they have to run through.
I love the Red and the judge being able to work it out that your job is to learn the law and enforce the law. My job is to break it.
Oh, that was a great moment, man. That was a really, really cool moment. I loved how he was doing New York legal throughout the episode.
Totally.
That was pretty fun. All right. Also, Dembe, he's a spiritual advisor or survivor trying to save Red's soul. So that was a good aspect where he's really trying to help his friend and trying to get him to get right. But he said something that I thought was really interesting. He says, sometimes you make your own fate. Sometimes fate makes you. That's something I think I'm going to put on a T-shirt.
Yeah, because it is a spiritual saying in a way, depending on whether you're Christian or Muslim or Buddhist or whatever. There's always this concept of, do we have our own free will, or is our path kind of destined for us by some higher power? And I think this is a great line to explain that in a simple way, regardless of what you believe in.
All right. Well, now we get to a character who actually got something to do this week. Go wrestler. Huh? Hair still didn't move. By the way, for those keeping track, I'm going to start a drinking game. Every time you see his hair move, do a shot. Okay, so.
That is the most sober game I've ever seen.
I know, it's like the worst drinking game ever. But there's going to be some point where he's running into a windstorm and I'm just going to be hammered. That's really the plan. Some Friday night, you're not going to catch me Saturday morning because I'm just gone. What happened? Wrestler's hair moved. God, Aaron's gone.
No, he takes his date from Alter Ego to the wedding. And then in order for him not to have to explain to the family where the date went, they get in this huge fight. She smacks him across the face, walks out of the wedding, but the hair doesn't still move, I guess.
No, still perfect. Perfectly coiffed. I think Wrestler was trying to beat around the bush to invite Liz to his cousin's wedding.
That's what I was picking up on. I mean, I'm not a Keenler by any means, but I'm just saying it sure seemed like he was like, hey, want to go to this wedding with me?
That's what I got. I mean, sitting in the car, he's like, hey, you know, my cousin's wedding, he's kind of a jackass. I don't really want to go. Hey, what are you doing this weekend? So you maybe want to... Nope, not pick it up when I'm laying down. All right, I'm going to go hire somebody instead. So he's not going to lie about being someone he's not, except he's a murderer.
What? Let's get a biggest two-faced thing comment, yep, I've seen in the show.
Listen here, Johnny Law. All right, you've already killed somebody. You don't get to pull that one, but I get you're trying to get back to who you were. But he does end up he does end up saving Tim and the inevitable murder by Deirdre and her friends, which is nice. But then at the end of the episode, he buys himself a date from Alter Ego. He actually got a full arc this episode, which he hasn't had, I don't think,
in a long time.
In a long time, yeah. So what did you think about the wrestler? By the way, I'm kind of surprised that wrestler has a hard time getting a date, but I'm going with the whole he works a lot. I mean, he's a good-looking dude. I got a feeling he could walk into a Starbucks and get a date to this wedding, but that's beside the point.
Well, it depends on how you want to look at it from a date perspective as well. There's the – I just want to bring
somebody's listening to this going, we don't care about the dating.
But he's a nice looking guy, but at the same time he's got issues, he's got challenges that you have to work through. And does he really want to settle down with somebody, or does he just want to play the field? I mean, he had his fiance. I mean, you lose your fiance in that way, you know, gunned down in a street. It takes a toll on a person. Do you really want to get that close to somebody and have them get lost again? It's a real character dilemma.
Yeah, here's his issues. He's successful, he's good looking, and he's in shape. Oh my goodness, what a lousy catch.
Hey,
stupid Liz. If his name was Tom and he's a loser, then Liz would be all over it. Know what I'm saying? Wrestler's the one. Go back to him. Go to the wedding. Go, Liz. You could still go. He hasn't hooked up with that, you know, actor yet.
Oh my gosh.
I'm sorry.
Why wouldn't you go to the wedding and just meet a bridesmaid? You know? Why do you have to go with somebody?
It's the same thing as everybody else. I mean, you don't want to have to deal with that. You just want to go say, here's my person I'm seeing, and then leave. If you go single, then everybody's trying to fix you up with everyone. If you bring a date, everybody leaves you alone. That I'm speaking from experience in a past life. That's what I hear. But I like your bridesmaid theory. It's always a better way to go. All right, Aram. He's awesome at words with friends or word splurge or whatever we're calling it. He mentions that in front of his girlfriend in a relationship, the truth always comes out. Shut up. No, it doesn't. If it did, we'd all be divorced.
That's right.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I'm going on record. You know what makes marriages work? Lies. Lies make it work. Do I look good in this dress? Yes, when you know they don't. Lies.
Did I load the dishwasher? I sure did. And it magically happens 24 hours later.
Exactly. Lies. That's the success. Freaking purists. All right. Some people have debated. Here's one thing I noticed. I really went back and I was a total dork on this. Some people debated what the date is on the show because we had that whole time jump and everything. So when Aram is looking at Tim Peterson's arrest record, again, not a proper representation of all Petersons. I just want to go on the record. It clearly shows the date as being January 30th, 2019. Data as of being of 1/30/19. So there you go. That means he pulled that data up on January 30th, 2019.
Do you think maybe that was the whole, like, why do we have to have the long hiatus was so that we could catch real time up to the show?
No, I think that they wanted to just have everything smushed together. But, I mean, people have debated what the time is, what the date is, so now you know. I mean, they're back in current time.
Yeah, well, you take the toe tag from the Tom's dead body, add the year for the coma and the time jump and whatever, and moved it up to 2019. So, yeah, we're only like a few days past that. Doesn't have to be months, years, blah, blah, blah.
All caught up. Samara still having memory issues, by the way. Still, she's doing word games to try to get her
aphasia skills under control.
Yeah, there you go. To get that back in play. And I get that, man, even as like we're getting older, have you noticed that? I start forgetting words. Where I can't remember them right off the top of my head where I used to. Do you get that at all?
No, because I remembered my thing from kindergarten or third grade. I can't remember where we actually learned it. So maybe I am losing some memory. But it was the thing about prepositions that they talked about in the show. So there was like this cool song that we learned back in grade school about what all the prepositions were. So it goes about, by, into, after, from, across, against, with, toward, on, among, along, around, of, to, beside, beyond, below, at, through. So as long as you could sing that, you don't have aphasia.
I can't sing that now, and I couldn't sing that then. So I think I've always had. And the sad part is every time I want to say it, I say euthanasia. So I definitely don't. I was actually telling somebody, we were talking about it. What's Samara have again? She has euthanasia. No, I don't think it's right, Peterson. Like, no, definitely euthanasia. And I know it's wrong, but it's still funny. So I keep doing it.
Oh my gosh. All right. You're drinking too much at your party with Tim, your cousin.
poor Tim. I wish I had a cousin Tim that was a billionaire. That'd be awesome. Okay. It's affecting her a little bit, her and Aram's relationship, but by the end, they're playing word splurge together because, you know how it is. The truth always comes out, even though she didn't tell him, but she's just going to play word games and apparently suck at them.
Well, it's good that they had that nod in this episode, too, because so far for this season, if they're engaged, they don't seem very engaged. They don't even seem like they're dating anymore in this first part of the season. So this at least gave a little bit of a winky romance back to it. And it felt all kind of warm and fuzzy once again, which was nice.
I gotta say, I don't think Aram's really had much to do. I actually think Aram hasn't really had an arc this season either.
No, he hasn't. Huh.
So Wrestler beat him.
In this episode, yes.
I mean, he just got an arc first, is what I'm saying. Like, Wrestler got an arc first. So
Dembe got an arc first.
Yeah. All right. Well, you better catch up to speed on that technical sport. Okay. You actually wrote in our format the preposition song. Let me see if I can read it. I can't.
That's because I wouldn't have been able to sing it if I didn't write it down because I have aphasia.
About, by, into, after, from, across, against, with, toward, on, among, along, around, off, to, beside, behind, below, at. My God, you did this in school?
Yeah. We had to memorize prepositions when we did diagramming sentences and gerunds and infinity phrases and all that other bull crap you do in English class.
So when I was swinging on the monkey bars, you were reading.
Something like
that. It's good. It's probably why you're smarter. All right, Liz, she was pretty much MIA this episode. I really thought she was in the backdrop. So before we get, there's a big question about that I want to bring up. But before we get there, she didn't have a lot to do this episode, but I did think her elevator fight with Deidre was pretty kick-ass.
That was awesome. That's the kind of stuff that I want to see Liz do more often, is just get fisticuffs, like beat up with other chicks. I mean, it's awesome. I just love it.
Chicks, dudes, I don't care who she's beating up. Just beat children, dogs, cats. I don't care. Just beat some stuff up. I like it.
Yeah, that was a really good scene. And then she's like, ma'am, could you hold the elevator?
Now that I think about it, I really would like her to beat up some kids. That would be be kind of funny. She just runs around paddling kids at an elementary school. All right. So here's my big question. You ready?
Ready.
And we didn't mention Cooper because Cooper has like one line. Okay. Cooper didn't do anything this episode, so we're just moving on.
He talks a lot more in Dollhouse.
he's probably had a play that week or something. Okay. So don't you feel like Liz and Jennifer should be doing more while Red is locked up? Isn't that kind of the point? I have not seen any progress in that other than we found the doctor or a patient who might have been around when he had surgery last week. That's it.
We got to hold that for like another episode later on, you know.
So what's your opinion on that? Because I'm kind of, I don't want to say frustrated because I'm still enjoying the show and I haven't really, you know, been bothered by it, but it has been noticeable because to me, that was the whole point. Put him in lockup so we can go ahead and we can find out stuff without him getting in our way. Yet you're not doing anything that I've seen unless there's like an episode that's going to go back in time though. You know,
and to be fair, because I think we kind of, with the whole 2-hour premiere and then we had the preemption that one, it has only been 2 episodes.
Well, no, he's been in jail. This is number 5. So that's 3 episodes he's been in jail.
Well, he was in jail at the end of the second episode.
2 and then 3, 4, now 5.
Episode 3, they found out the identity of the guy, the doctor had the patient that they're going to have to go track down. So really, it's only been 2 episodes that there hasn't really been progress.
I would say that neither one of those have really been for me. I'm thinking, you know, this is gotta be weeks we're talking because courts, you know, they take time. Yeah. It's been weeks. To me, there needs to be more than that, I would think. I mean, maybe I'm just being one of those, you know, annoying TV watchers. I don't know, but that's what I'm getting from it. Is it doesn't feel it's not moving on my clock, man.
Well, and that's the challenge with the 22 episodes versus the 10 episodes. Because I think when we watch a 10-episode show, by like episode 4, we're like, 6 left. get this thing moving. Like, what's going to happen here? But we forget that there's still 16 left at this point. So
I get that. I get all of that. It's just, I just feel like I'm not seeing enough. But I'm hoping that maybe we'll get some like a whole episode on Liz and Jennifer, what they've been doing while he's locked up or something. Maybe that is coming down the pike or up the pike.
See, and that's a TV trope I hate. I hate when they do the, okay, we're moving along, A, B, C, D, E. Oh, let's go back to B and a half. Just keep it in sync with each other. They can do stuff while he's in jail. She doesn't have to be there being like, did you hear the tape? Did you, huh?
Well, they're not doing anything right now. So do something. Make something happen. I want them to get somewhere and get some information. I'm sure next week we'll get something because they can't go like 2 or 3 episodes without doing something.
I have officially joined you though in the I am not watching a promo ever again.
Finally, you just now get there?
Well, this one was the most infuriating because they're like, oh,
I have for this episode?
Yeah, because they're like alter ego. And I'm like, well, that doesn't sound like a blacklister. It's got to be a non-numbered episode. It's going to be something huge. There's a tape. There's a tape with the recording of the person. Did you listen to it? And then it's the last 2 seconds of the episode. I'm like, come on, son of a. So much hype for 2 weeks and nothing.
You got me, NBC. I typically watch it like afterward just to see what they gave away this time. And apparently the whole promotion is based on him going to hear the tape. And then he doesn't even hear the tape. I thought that was actually kind of funny. I'm like, you know, somebody threw their drink at the TV at some point.
That was me.
Was it? I mean, the one I saw anyway, maybe you saw a different one, but it was all like, Red's getting, he's going to hear the tape and then he's going to know who betrayed him. You know, it's kind of like what the whole vibe was. Is that the same one you saw?
He already knows.
You think so?
I think so. Although I did find it funny at the end. It's like when he's like, and when I find out who did it, I'm going to go kill him.
No, he didn't say that. He said their fate will be sealed.
Yeah, his fate. He said his fate would be sealed.
Yeah,
masculine, I don't think he masculine knows. Choice specifically. I wonder why he assumed it was a man.
Well, obviously, Liz is going to get a sex change and become a man before the end of the season. Sorry, too far? All right, let's go to to Red. There are no accidents around me, not unless it's on purpose. One of my favorite lines.
I'm going to get that one on a t-shirt.
That was pretty good. But he continues his antics at the trial. He does have a very human moment with Dembe in the jail cell. But aside from that, it's very, like I said, New York legal from Red Reddington this week. Do you like what he's doing, what Spader and Reddington has been doing in the courtroom?
Oh, absolutely. I think the whole suit thing was amazing. Like the guy in the navy suit, he's like, no, it's more like a twill. It's like when in the right light it becomes a plum or a red. It was like, oh my gosh, this is just, it's like perfect Alan Shore, but with a whole different Reddington spin on it, and it's like even better. That I hope that they actually go back and make Boston, or maybe it's New York legal, right? As you were saying, they make it like New York legal but with Reddington. I think that would be a fantastic show.
I gotta tell you, his cross-examination of the officer was spot on and well done. I was actually very impressed. Usually when TV, you know, you get cross-examinations the whole time, especially if you ever went to school for any of it, you're just looking and go, right, okay. You can't say that. You can't do that. You can't, you know, most of it was actually pretty spot on. And the judge was great because her, even though I don't necessarily agree with a lot of her findings, I get where she was coming from. And it was very well explained and very detailed. They did a lot of really, or the writers did a lot of really solid research on presenting this properly, which is cool because a show like Blacklist doesn't really have to do that. They can make it more entertaining, more dramatic, and it's actually pretty close to law.
And I think the challenge with the courtroom scenes that people aren't liking is that maybe there's no counterbalance. So you have the courtroom scenes, which are really good, but Liz isn't doing anything.
He can't shoot people. That's what it is. Well, Red's not killing people. He's confined. See, I like that. We've had 5 years of him doing all the cool stuff. Let's see him a little bit more challenged. I actually want to see him more challenged in prison and with the court system. And maybe not the whole season, but, you know, if you've watched the show before, which everybody listening obviously has, you know that usually the first half of the season is one direction and the second half is a different direction. And that's what I think is going to – I think he's going to be in jail until episode 10, 12, something like that.
Well, and the thing I love about Reddington the most is that – when you really look at the series as a whole, I mean, I love the things like he drops the cigar and the Hellfire missiles rain down on the beach in the season 2 premiere. Like things like that are bombastic, right? Where he coats the guy with the alcohol and then lights the cigar and it's like, oh, it's taking too long. The suspense, and he shoots him anyway. Those were fun things back in the day. But the dialogue and his mannerisms and the speeches that he gives, I think is what really makes the character. So to be able to hone in on his dialogue and his wittiness and the way he does things, I think it's much more fascinating to see how he gets himself into and out of situations because of that.
Mm-hmm. And this one, normally I will say in past seasons, I kind of get how he's going to get out of this, you know, how this crazy Duke boy is going to get out of this one. I have no idea at this point because so far they've actually had some really good legal ins and outs to try to maneuver to get him out of here. I'm fascinated. I'm really, really fascinated with how he's going to get out of this one. Is he just going to break out? That's why we have that profiling question. Is he going to break out of the clink? Is he going to finally find some loophole, some legal loophole? Because there are a ton of them where he can get out of there. I don't know, but I'm fascinated with, you know, how that's going to happen. But I am also, you know, I love law stuff. So to me, this is just like, it's just spoon feeding me.
Well, and I thought for sure that he was going to get out on this charge. I mean, granted, we're all biased on Red's side because of the show, but at the same time, he made a very valid argument, and I think that it would totally be passable. And the judge was like, it was really super hard because she was probably borderline on it as well. I don't agree with her decision, because I truly believe that it was unwarranted. And at the same time, she disagrees. So we get more courtroom stuff.
Well, I understood. I mean, I thought her judgment was wrong, but I also have, you know, I have an affection for the criminal guy. So I get it.
You don't because, say.
Well, basically her decision comes down to who do I believe more? The police officer who's doing his job and serving the good or the master criminal? It has to be one of those two things. And yes, he made a compelling argument, but it all comes down to, do I believe the guy who's a confessed liar or do I believe the guy who's doing his job? And she chose the cop.
Because of the shiftiness and the invasiveness and the pissing him off, and which I think is fair.
Well, he did his own quote unquote investigation. So in order for her to land on Ruddington's side, she would have to confirm that the officer was out of line in his quote unquote investigation, that it was all just purely emotional, reactional. That's where it gets tricky. You know, it gets tricky because if she sides with Red, she's basically saying the cop was an emotional cop. And there was some of that, but I also, you know, Red was being rude and, you know, many police officers do use that opportunity to pat people down, unfortunately.
Right. I thought they were going to do something about the fake license is what did him in. And I was like, but he's supposed to have a fake license. He's undercover.
Well, I mean, technically, here's the trick. Okay. Here's one legal thing that I think would have like ended the show about 20 minutes before it did. He actually confesses to using a counterfeit license. He confesses to having a 9mm in his back pocket, cocked and loaded. That all becomes on the record as soon as he says it in the courtroom. He doesn't really need anything else after that because he admitted two crimes in the court.
And those
that would have shut the whole procedures down.
Yeah, and could those two crimes that he admitted be enough to nullify the agreement?
Yeah, because he admitted the gun charge was true in court. You're trying to get it thrown out. I mean, you know, you don't want to put it on the record. Yep. Once you put it on the record, it's on the record, and you can't take anything off the record, and it's not sealed. This isn't a juvenile court. So
now they got to prove that the fake identity and the gun and all that stuff was for his cover as part of the agreement.
Well, honestly, I've said this since it was first brought up. All really Cooper has to do is say the gun was necessary for him to keep his cover up. And then he walks. But I don't know if they're going to do that. They're obviously going to go a different way and they're going to drag it out a little bit more. But I think Cooper's going to be the savior in all of this at some point.
I'm sure he will.
Yeah. Okay. Now, the recording. He vows to hear the tape. He wants to hear that recording, and he tries to obviously get it brought up in court, and they won't do it. Thankfully, I was actually watching that going, you better not, because there's no reason he needs to hear it. He just needs a transcript. And they did that, and I was, like, once again, I was very impressed with that. But he is going to hear it at some point. Otherwise, the TV show isn't going to be as exciting.
Is he going to hear it, though? I mean,
oh, he's going to hear it.
Liz is already broken into some evidence lockers in order to steal stuff out of there. So could she go break into some more evidence lockers and steal that out of there?
He's going to hear it. I guarantee before we get to episode 10 or 12, he's going to hear that tape. Maybe next week. I don't know. It depends on what the promo said. But I doubt you're going to. Whenever they tell you this week, we're going to learn the truth. We don't. Stop watching promos. You'll enjoy the show more. You will. So what do you think? You say he's not going to hear it? That's not going to happen?
He's not going to hear it.
All right.
I think if anything else, the way that he gets out of this whole mess is that Liz actually confesses.
You think she's going to confess?
How are they going to be able to work together if he's like, I'm going to kill the person who did this, blah, 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 blah. And the only way that he's like, I understand why you did it. Because, and then if the confession gets him out, it'll be like her pass. You get one pass.
I could see her doing that once she finds anything, but she has to find something besides he's not Raymond or anything. She needs more than that.
And maybe that's what she finds out. Like, here's all this good humanitarian stuff he also did for the 20 years. Like, all this money he has amassed is actually funding, you know, feed children around the world and hunger.
True.
Or an environmental cause in the case of Megan. So
possibly, I guess. Well, so what do you want to, here's what I want to know is what do you want to happen? So he finds out she's behind it. She's the shady one. Does he kill her? Would he actually try to kill Liz, do you think? What's your opinion on
that? No way in hell.
Yeah, I agree.
No, that would be weird. Like, the whole time he's like protecting her and then she's the betrayer. I think he goes, bravo. You finally learned and you are the master class and you have bested me. I bow to you.
I don't think it's quite going to roll that way. But because there's going to be something. I mean, I think he's got to understand. I don't think Dembe will hold it personally against her. But he did say his fate will be sealed. I'm kind of curious what that means, because it doesn't. He didn't say I'll kill him. He just said his fate will be sealed. And I think everybody, whoever it is, their fate might be different.
That's true, because technically, you know, we assume that this is like the on-screen versus off-screen thing. We assume fate will be sealed means you dead. But fate would be sealed could mean something like you have officially immersed and transformed yourself from the goody two-shoe FBI agent to the criminal mastermind, you know, that you were always meant to be.
Boom, boom.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
What I want to see, though, I want to see some movement. Like, Jennifer hasn't been on the show for 2 episodes. Like, they got to do something next episode. They got to.
She was on the pawnbroker one for like a half a second.
For like half a second. So yeah, she really hasn't been there on for 3 weeks.
She hasn't done anything.
Right.
That's really what it was. She hasn't really done anything since he's been locked up. The whole point of the plan. And she hasn't done anything. So we need to see some movement there. And I think we're going to.
Hope so. Hope so.
I have faith. The faith. The faith. Ah. That was my George.
Don't
Michael
ever do that again.
All right. Well, want to take a quick second to say thank you to those of you that are supporting our show on patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. That's Patreon, patreon.com/theblacklistgsm, or anywhere you see the word support the show. You can help make the podcast better by throwing a few bucks, pound, gen, whatever, in the hat, so to speak. We have different support levels for you, which you get cool rewards, like a t-shirt, if you want to become a task force or syndicate member. You can also even get your own official Blacklist number.
Yes, and by contributing to help us hit some goals as well, we can bring back the Blacklist Exposed apps. We can do the show live and see the video of Aaron and I each and every week, scary as it may be.
I don't know if anybody really wants that. And maybe that's what's going to hinder donation.
But we do want to try to get like a watch party or something, either here in Chicago or in New York or something. So if we can get up to that $2,000 a month level, that would be awesome.
And every bit of support helps. And we want to thank Doug for being our first, very first official Blacklister. Doug gets his own official number and Blacklister name. Also, big thanks to our syndicate member, Marilyn, for her gracious support, and our task force members, Leone and Brandon. All of them get a cool Blacklist Exposed t-shirt as well.
Also, shout outs to Kevin, Paulette, Isabel, Richard, Nell, James, Michelle, Judy, and Sharon for being our amazing special agents. Thanks so much for supporting us and supporting the podcast.
Woo-hoo. Again, that's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. That's patreon.com/theblacklistgsm. Fill the fedora and get some awesome rewards for yourself. We'll be back with Special Agent Intel right after this. Welcome to Smirk.
Each week, one of our hosts will write a story with a specific topic in mind.
After unraveling their tale, the fun begins as we identify and launch into a spirited discussion on the author's topic.
It's a meshing of creative storytelling, realistic discussion, and a healthy dose of humor.
Be sure to subscribe to Smirk on your favorite podcast app.
And visit our website at smirkpodcast.com.
This is the show that looks at truth, fiction, and reality with a smirk.
Hey, Dembe Loyals, this is Hisham Taufik. You are listening to Blacklist Exposed on Golden Spiral Media.
Now it's time to see what you thought about this week's episode with our special agent intel, James Lael. I can see at least one way Red gets out of this, but it's brutal. Liz goes to the judge and confesses the tip was her or Jennifer. That would violate the terms of the FBI's agreement with Red and invalidate the legality of the search. No, it wouldn't. I don't think it would.
Does it violate the terms of the immunity agreement?
No, I don't think it...
How does that get Red out of it? That would get Red convicted, wouldn't it?
I don't know about convicted, but I don't really think that's going to matter one way or the other, because the officer was still functioning on a valid tip. Possibly, because, I mean, she has... Inherent now? No, I mean, because it wasn't untrue. Nothing that she tipped them off to was untrue.
Yeah. There was a man in his 50s with a hat and a suit and
looked, good idea. I just don't know if I would concur. I don't know if I would agree with that, but you could be right.
I mean, he did look fishy. I mean, he was buying a pretzel from a cart on a street.
Yeah, who does that?
Buy it besides inside
everyone
the bar.
In New York.
Food safety.
What else we got?
Monica said, that was a good episode. Spader is a hoot in the courtroom. Red bringing up his smartassery with the cop and the DA was golden. No wonder he needs Dembe to save his soul. Now, if only he would listen to Dembe and tell others the truth. Those were the most horrific.
They can't handle the truth.
Thank you. Those were the most horrific monkey masks I have ever seen. It was pretty creepy.
That was pretty freaky, but I want one.
I do. I totally do. It would be an awful parent who would buy those for their small children for Halloween. I'm hoping Samara's situation is improving, but something tells me she might slip and cause a major calamity. Wrestler's running a date? What? His coworkers are going to give him hell if they find out about it. Finally, I think Red knows it was Liz who tattled on him, and I think he likes to see her squirm.
Yeah, I want to just give a shout out to the internet who collectively said, Wrestler will go with you when he needed a date. So I got a feeling the ladies like, and the men too, like the wrestler.
They do.
Wendy Davies, I found the Blacklister slightly yawnsome this week. Okay, props for that word, because I've never seen that put together like that, and I love it.
That's three for Wendy this week.
Yeah, love the Dembe Red scenes, and hope we get more of them, or at least see Dembe out and about doing Red's bidding. One thing I picked up on is that, once again, Dembe implores Red to just tell Liz the truth. This makes me think that he may have suspicion it was Liz who made the call. I also think that it's a possibility, which is what Troy seems to think. I also think it's a possibility that whatever the truth is could have the potential to save his life. Red appears to be in a vulnerable place despite all that bravado in court, and his obsession with finding out who betrayed him could end up being his own undoing if he doesn't tread carefully. Thank goodness he has Dembe as his spiritual advisor. Red is going to need someone to keep him grounded over the next few weeks.
What's funny is that if Liz's tip, and for some reason he doesn't get out of this and he does get put in a death penalty and blah, 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 then that painting from season three actually comes true. It was Liz that put him in the ground.
Oh, guess what? A spoiler alert. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Crystal said, I like the episode. I think Wrestler going to Alter Ego could have been one of two things. Either he's still working the case to ensure the company isn't conducting cons on the regular, or he's not the type of guy to try to just pick up a girl to take to a wedding. The one night with Navabi was different. They know each other and they both knew it was what they was going into it. But Wrestler, in my opinion, doesn't seem like the type to go out and try to get a girl to go to a wedding with him. For all we know, it's in a week. I can see him getting drinks thrown in his face. So my question is, why does he think he needs to take a date? He can go solo and maybe meet somebody at the wedding, unless he doesn't want to meet someone or date for that matter.
Another option, old boy's got no game. Can we just put it on the record? He's got no game. I mean, you already said he only got Samar because they were both having a moment. Outside of that, maybe he just can't get a date because he's not smooth enough.
Yeah, he didn't even land Liz when he was like, hey, I got you this wine for your birthday.
He's going to start walking around the room and say, Liz, you're ugly. Then she'll start getting interested in him.
Exactly right. Exactly. They always like the idiot badass boys for some reason. Yeah.
Say something stupid and mean, then suddenly like, you know what? He's kind of interesting.
It seems like the storyline this season is to see Red on trial for his crimes, but the state is going to have to prove his guilt on all of the charges. Who will be the witnesses? Dembe? The government? Cabal members? One way to not only get to the truth and for the writers to give us a lot of background into the past events and what the Blacklist is actually all about would be a trial of Red's crimes.
I think that would be fun.
I think that'd be really fun.
I think people would really get sick of the courtroom stuff, like fans, because you want to see
Red doing Red stuff.
It's kind of an action show. You want to see some action. So yeah, you want to see Red doing Red stuff.
But it's a creative way to do exposition without doing exposition.
It is, to a degree, but a lot of I will say, like, I've heard a lot of fans who aren't thrilled that we're still dealing with courtrooms, and I get it because it's not the kind of show they've been used to. So if enough people are frustrated, then you definitely don't want to stay on that road. But trust me, that path has already been carved. They're already on, like, episode 15 or 16.
Sounds about right.
Yep. So I'm looking forward to when he finally gets out of court and people are like, they listened to the fans. I'm like, no, they didn't. They didn't even know what you were going to say yet. They've already got this season almost done. All right, Deborah Jean, this entire episode with the Blacklister feels a lot like the Djinn. What's your fantasy? What do you wish for? Fate would be pulling Wrestler and Liz together. Not sure when, but it's building pretty nice so far. I would concur, except Liz missed an entire window right there when he's desperately like, will you please go to this wedding with me?
He said it exactly that way, too.
If he would have, she would have won.
I think Anita wins this week, though. What if Wrestler, by chance, bumps into Jennifer, who actually is working for Alter Ego? Just saying.
Weird. That would be weird.
It ties it together. Like, she's not really Liz's sister. She's just playing the role because Liz wants a family so bad.
No, I'm not buying that. I mean, she knows there is a Jennifer. We know that. Naomi had a daughter. That's a little far-fetched, but it would make it interesting. I'll give you that. They would have to go a long way to sell me on that. Not quite as far as the Red Arena thing, but they'd still have to go pretty far to sell me on it.
But she does have that conversation with, was it Timothy, right? About the, you just wanted a family. I could totally understand that. Like those lines in the dialogue are there for a reason.
And I get it.
It's a good working theory. I like it.
I like it too. But I also think Tim did want a family. So it kind of fit with old Tim. Poor Tim. I hope he's redeemed the name.
Yes.
The Peterson name.
I sure hope
very
he
important
has.
To me.
Man, don't shame my family. And then he sends you a check.
I'll take it. I will cash it. I will eat that up. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for this episode. We're going to conclude this episode. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @TheBlacklistGSM, where we live tweet during the East Coast feed when possible. And we use the show's hashtag #TheBlacklist.
Don't forget to follow us on Tumblr, Instagram, and join the Facebook group. Just search for The Blacklist Exposed. Talk about the show, the podcast, or how you would spend an inheritance, say $10 million.
Is that all he got? I thought he got more than that.
Everybody got, I think the other two groups got $10 million, and then he got the rest, however much the rest was. Billions, trillions?
I just assumed it was billions, because I figure if you're getting a vote at a table like that, you got to be a billionaire, because the millionaires are like peasants to them.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you got $10 million? Get out of here.
You just won the lottery. You got an inheritance. How much money did you, what would you buy? What would you do? Talk about it in the group.
That would be fun. All right. You can also subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and now Pandora, or from your favorite podcast player of choice. You can even listen from the website, plus all the intel and analysis about this episode for Alter Ego by visiting theblacklistexposed.com. I do want to mention, Troy came on our recent The Hollywood Outsider episode. We talked about a lot of the upcoming TV shows, so you can check that out if you go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. And that was a pretty fun episode. It was like a TV preview of 2019. Big thanks for listening. Don't forget to answer our profiling question. Will Red get out of prison legally or illegally? How's he getting out? Is Michael Scofield going to show up? Do you not know who Michael Scofield is? That's really the important question. Because while we're waiting for the next episode, you could go binge Prison Break.
That's a lot of Prison Break.
That's a great show. I don't care what anyone says. I don't care how ridiculous it is. That's a great show.
Yeah, the fifth season was better than the fourth season, but...
It was, yeah.
All of it is good. Good watch. Better than Blind Spot.
I've never watched Blind Spot.
Don't.
It actually came up where, yeah, and you could definitely keep this in the podcast. So we were getting ready to watch it, and or it was on, and my wife and I were debating, like, do you want to watch it? She's like, no, let's just watch last week's Blacklist again. Like, okay, done. So I don't think I'm ever going
to
watch it.
Great concept, but... No offense to Jamie Alexander. She's most beautiful actress, and that doesn't smile.
She never smiles in that show?
No. Barely.
That's too bad. All right. Well, we're just rambling at this point. All right, guys. You have a great week.
All right.
See you next week.
We'll see you later. Until next time, I'm Agent Troy Heinrichs. That's at Troy Heinrichs on Twitter. And if you want to learn more about me, just visit, about.me/Troy Heinrichs.
And I'm Agent Aaron Peterson. You can hear me talking about movies and TV on the Hollywood Outsider podcast, as well as Remake This Movie Right. We are available at thehollywoodoutsider.com or on Twitter @5popcorn. Be sure to subscribe, download the app, submit your feedback, but most importantly, keep yourself off of
the Blacklist.
The Blacklist Exposed is a Golden Spiral Media production. Find more of our great podcasts at goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.